joining us today, the last day of System Center Universe. I'm a bit surprised to see so many faces after the party of yesterday. So thank you for joining us. I want to talk today about System Center deployments. And I want to show you the difference between a typical System Center deployment where you need to do every single step manually versus how you can do it in an automated, easy way. So with me, I have Christopher Kerrt, and today we will show you how you can sit down, relax, and enjoy a nice cup of coffee while System Center and the Windows Azure Pack will be installed for you. So today, during this this session, we will go through every single step, every single installation step of a typical System Center deployment, how you can do that in an automated way with the PowerShell Deployment Toolkit. So PDT, PowerShell Deployment Toolkit. That's how we do it in an automated way. Now, if you look at the System Center components, we all know the different products like Orchestrator, Operations Manager, Service Manager, and so on and so on. All of those different products have a lot of sub-components, like SCOM has the management servers, the gateways, the SQL database, and so on and so on. All of those components need to be installed manually, one by one, one by one. It's a lot of work, basically. A lot of prerequisites needs to be installed. And then last year, we had the Windows Azure Pack that came out, which, to be honest, is even worse. It has a lot of components. And as you will see, the list will go on and on and on. It's almost like a never-ending list or never-ending story. You can install all of those components on one or two machines, but still, it's a lot of manual installation steps, a lot of configuration steps as well. Christopher is going to show us later on how, in a typical System Center deployment, how you need to do that and how much time you lose, basically, as well. So we have the System Center components, but what about the prerequisites? And it's a lot to put on one slide. If I had to put every single prerequisites, it would take me about 10 slides. So I tried to compress everything on one single slide. On the left side, you see all the different server roles and features that you need to enable in Windows. Then you see all the prerequisites, all the software that is needed, like SQL 2008, SQL 2012, the service packs, the cumulative updates of SQL. You need to install them. So first you need to install SQL, then the service pack, then the cumulative updates, and so on and so on. You need to install a report viewer, SQL report viewer, on every single, almost on every single server where System Center is installed. .NET framework, 3.5, 4.0, and so on and so on. All of those components need to be installed or downloaded manually as well. So it's a lot of steps, and I try in my day-to-day job to optimize the work that I'm doing on a day-to-day basis. I'm trying to optimize that as much as possible, and we will show you later on how you can do that.
Okay. Thank you, Alex. Who is running System Center in his company? Almost
everyone.
Everybody. Who is running a lab also in his company? Okay, another few people. Are you reinstalling often your labs? Do you need to reinstall often and often again? Okay, a few of them. Okay, great. So first of all, when you start to deploy System Center, you have first to think about it. What I need? Which software I need to install? Do I need Orchestrator? Do I need Service Manager? What I have to install? So the first idea you have to define, so it's your plan. Even if it's for a lab, even if it's for a POC, if it's for production environment, you have to define it somewhere, create a design document with everything. After that, you have to download all the bits. An ID, how many gigs for all the System Center bits? About 31. 31 gigabytes if you want to download all the bits with all the prerequisites. And of course, you need to know all the path from the Microsoft website to download all the prerequisites. because all the time when we try to install system center product, you've got the prerequisite check, and after they say, okay, you are missing this one, you are missing this one, after that you have to go on Bing, find the right one, download the link, and download the application for everything. Once that's done, so you've got all your bits, all your system, all your prerequisite, but you need to get your servers, so you need to request them. Maybe you have the right to install the server yourself, maybe you have to ask to another team, okay guys, I need 10, 12, 16 servers to install all my different products. Okay, sure, but that will take time. You will not get it in 5 minutes, that for sure. So here, you have to wait again. So you downloaded all the bits, you requested your server, and now you have to wait the installation of your server and the installation of the OS on it and so on. After that, another challenge, service accounts. How many service accounts do I need? I need to connect service manager with operation manager. I need one service account. Also for orchestrator, I need service account for SQL. I want to monitor my SQL DB. I need another service account. How many do you need? That should be part of your plan. Again, so you have to think, you have to wait, you have to recontact all your team to define your requirement for that. When you've got your service account, finally, you could log on each server. You will have to log on each server to connect, to install, to give the right, to grant the permission on all your different server. And there, you have to start to install all the prerequisite that Alex showed us. You have to install it on all the server, report viewer, all everything over there, before to be able to install any system center product. Also, what you need SQL. Okay, your DB are managed by DBA team. You need to request a new DB. Okay, this DB should be highly available. Yes or no? You need a cluster. Maybe you will have to wait again. So it could take a lot of time. It could take weeks before getting all the components that you need to be able to install System Center. So that's really the idea. So what we want to say here, okay, there is a lot of product, a lot of prerequisite, a lot of work, even just to do a simple installation. And if you are doing or using lab for demo like we are doing, we are building our lab days after days and so on. So we cannot keep it the same. So when you have to redo all from scratch, you have to save time. So that's not possible to do it like this. And finally, bits are being installed. But you have to install also all the different consoles, because you've got one for operation manager, one for DPM, one for service manager, the WAP console, and so on. You need to provide admin rights to your team, to all the different groups in your company that need to be able to access to all these different products. So you need to contact them, you need to find the groups, and so on. Console, also, you have to connect them, connector between service manager and orchestrator, operation manager, service manager for the CI, for example. And finally, deploy all your agent, VMM agent, SCUM agent, SCCM agent. You have to take the time to do that. That's a lot of different action. And finally, you will be able to manage something with System Center. So that could represent weeks, or maybe months also, before we are be able to use your environment, your System Center installation. Alex, I know that you've got a lot of free time, so please give us your secret. How are you doing that?
Yeah, the challenge for us, Christopher, is that we travel a lot. We give a lot of sessions like today. We give a lot of proof of concept as well for our customers. And I don't want to waste time on building again and again my lab environment over and over again. I want to concentrate on my slides. I want to concentrate on the content that I want to deliver to my customers or to you guys. So I don't want to waste time on building my System Center environment over and over again. So that's why I'm using the PowerShell deployment toolkit, basically. So the PowerShell deployment toolkit has been developed by Rob Willis from Microsoft. You can download it from the Gallery TechNet website. And the latest version has been mentioned on the slides as well. So the PowerShell deployment toolkit is a bunch of PowerShell scripts and a bunch of XML files that you can edit as well. So those two components, we will deep dive on those PowerShell scripts later on. That's the PowerShell deployment toolkit, basically. Now, there's also a graphical user interface. If you don't like editing XML files, or if you don't like PowerShell scripts, then you can use the graphical interface that has been developed by Benedict Berger, a Microsoft MVP. And the graphical interface basically will allow you in a nice look and feel, a nice wizard, to automatically save and edit the PowerShell scripts and XML files.
Mm-hmm. Alex, from what I know, Benedict is somewhere here, so yep, during this conference. So if you've got question about PDT, graphic user interface, you will be able to find him somewhere, so in one of the sessions.
So So the PowerShell deployment toolkit is a set of different scripts, and just like Christopher, we need to gather our requirements. Like, we need the physical hardware. I need a place somewhere where I can run my my proof of concept, where I can run my lab environment. So I need the physical hardware. Then, just like Christopher, I need to define my deployment. I need to know
which system center product
which components I need to install, on which server I need to install them. So I need to make a design document as well. Once I've defined my deployment, I need to translate my design document basically in the variable .xml file. So the variable .xml file is an XML file that consists of all the different system center components and where you want to install those components. So on which server you want to install that the system center components. Yes? Yes, so the question was, do you have a selection of which components you want to install? The answer is yes. So first of all, when you download the PowerShell deployment toolkits, you will have an example variable.xml file that you can use as a reference document to see which components you can install. You can easily remove components that you don't need. You can easily add components that you need. So it's a very flexible way, basically. I will show you later on how you can do that, how you can easily add and remove system center components. So once you have defined the deployment, you need to download the media, you need to download the bits, but I will not do that one by one like Christopher. I don't have a lot of free time.
The nightmare is really the prerequisite. Downloaded the bits, that's not a big deal, but prerequisites are really a nightmare because you need to know all the location of these bits on download Microsoft website, because not for all the system printer product you will get a link. For some of them, yes, but not for all.
Yeah.
So.
So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to launch a downloader.ps1 file. So that's a PowerShell script with one single button, basically. It will download about 31 gigabytes of bits of media. It will save them locally on my hard drive. And it's going to extract the files. If it's in a zip format, it's going to extract the files. It's going to download as well the service packs, and it will do that all for me automatically with one single button. The next step, unlike Christopher, who needs to request operating systems, request virtual machines, and wait for a couple of days or weeks, with one single button, I can launch vmcreator.powershell PS1 script, and that will basically read all the information from my variable.xml file and create the virtual machines that I need. So with one single button, about 17, 18, 20 virtual machines will be deployed and joined to the domain. Then the last step is install System Center, install the Windows Azure Pack. That's done with the last PowerShell script, installer.ps1. Installer.ps1 will install all of the different components, will connect the different components to each other as well, will deploy the agents, will import the management pack, and so on.
So from what I understood, PDT is only 5 files, 3 PS1, 2 XML files.
Yes, that's correct.
That's all that you need to be able to download all the system center bits and do your installation. Yes?
Yeah, so the question was, is having a domain, an Active Directory domain, a requirement? The answer is no. If you don't have a domain, you can PDT can deploy a domain for you as well. So that's something that you need to define in the variable.xml file. Use an existing domain or create a new domain.
That's an option. So you could select and do whatever you want. Yes?
That's a very good question. So the question is, can you run this in Azure? The answer is yes, you can do that in Azure. But the PowerShell scripts, like the VM creator, PS1 for example, is using the Hyper-V PowerShell commandlets. So if you want to create virtual machines in Azure, that's possible. But then you need to change from Hyper-V commandlets to the Azure PowerShell commandlets. But that's possible. So for example, if you upload a sysprept VHD in Azure, you could use that to deploy 17, 20 virtual machines in Azure. But you need to transform the Hyper-V commandlets in Azure commandlets.
Yep.
Then for the installer PS1, you will not have to change anything. That's just basic PowerShell commandlets. But the VM creator one, you will have to change.
Yeah, we really hope that somebody will find the time to create a VM creator for Azure like this. We'll be able to
but
deploy.
But you have a lot of free time, Christopher, so you could do
Thank
it.
Thank you.
No? There are a couple of requirements for the PowerShell deployment toolkits to be able to run. So you need 7-zip or WinRAR on the server that you're going to use to launch the different scripts. Most of the time, I'm launching the PDT from my Hyper-V host. So that means that I need 7-zip or WinRAR on my Hyper-V host, because the download.ps1 script is going to download the bits and it's going to extract the zip files as well. So that's why you need 7-zip. Web PI from Microsoft you need as well. That's a manual download you still need to do. Of course, you need the admin access, so you need administration privilege permissions on the virtual machines to be able to install System Center. And you need WinRM enabled as well. Otherwise, if you launch a PowerShell script from the Hyper-V host, for example, you will not have access, as the firewall is going to block the connection between the Hyper-V host and the virtual machine. So you need WinRM enabled. Now, what I do most of the time, group policies, I will configure the admin access and the WinRM in group policies. So when my virtual machines will be deployed and be joined to the domain automatically, they will have the group policies and WinRM will be disabled, for example. System Center 2012 R2, you need to download manually.
Why do I need to do that? Tell me.
It's only one step, Christopher. Mm-hmm. So all the other bits, all the other media will be downloaded for you manually, except System Center 2012 R2, from a legal and marketing perspective, Christopher.
Marketing.
So Microsoft wants to be able to track your name and your email address, basically, if you download System Center media from the website. So when you want to download that, you need to provide your live ID. And from a marketing and legal perspective, they want to be able to use your email address. You need a sysprept VHD, of course, that will be used to create the virtual machines or to deploy the virtual machines.
Question concerning the media. So you said that we need to download it. Okay. Do we need to download it from MSDN, or it could be also a trial version, an evaluation version, or it should be absolutely licensed?
No, that's a very good question, Christopher. So you can download the evaluation versions, or you can use the licensed version from your company. That's not an issue. But if you're using the evaluation version, or if you're downloading the evaluation version in the variable.xml file, you can provide the product key. And then the product key will be inserted in the installation when you install the System Center.
So if you are rebuilding your lab often and often, you maybe not need to provide the license key directly. Now, if you want to do a production installation, you could do it. See if you've got a nice XML file.
So we have gathered the requirements. We have download all the bits. The next step is to define our deployment. We will do that in the variable.xml file. So the variable.xml file is a file that contains all the settings, basically, to customize your System Center deployment. So you need to define the global settings, like the name of your domain, which account you want to use to deploy System Center, the passwords, the product key, for example. All of that will be defined in the global settings. You need also to define the location, a hard drive location or share folder, where all the bits will be downloaded. You need to define all the settings for each individual System Center components. So for example, you need to define If you want to install VMM on the C drive or on the D drive, you need to define the administrator, the VMM admin group. You need to define on which server you want to install VMM, on which server you want to install SQL. You need to define which components you want to integrate and so on with each other. You need to define the SQL servers and instances as well. So you could use, for example, one SQL server with all the different, with six or seven SQL instances, or you could use seven SQL servers with each one instance. All of that is possible in the variable.xml file. So first of all, you need to sit down basically and design your lab environments, and then translate the design in the variable.xml file.
But hopefully for you, you will see when you download it directly from Microsoft website, you've got already a lot of value, a lot of example of sample that are already available in the XML file. So you just need, in fact, to edit it, copy, do some copy paste, some modification. You don't have to start from scratch.
So that's an example of the variable.xml file. At the top, you define the global settings, like the product key, the installer service account. So that's the account that is going to be used to install the System Center components. So make sure that the installer account has local admin privileges on the local VMs.
That was the GPO that you talked about earlier.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Or you could use a domain admin as well, but I'm using an installer account and then using group policies to make sure that my installer account has local admin privileges. You need to define which components, like the orchestrated database server, on which server it needs to be installed. So that's basically how you define your deployments. So you need to define the different components, like orchestrated database server, orchestrated management server, and then next to it, the name of the server on which you want to deploy that component.
Question. Now, as you could see, we've got the runbook.
You're asking me a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Christian.
You've got the runbook designer installed on one server. If I want to install the runbook designer also to another server, what I have to do?
So you just need to copy-paste basically the name of the role, and that name will be System Center 2012 R2 Orchestrator Additional Management Server, and then equals your second
server name. So
yeah.
It's really easy if you want to run System Center on multiple server, or if you want to install a terminal server with all your console, you just have to do some copy paste over there.
Yeah. So let's have a quick look at the variable.xml file and how you can edit that file. So this is my XML file that I'm using almost on a weekly basis to deploy System Center. So you can see my installer account. Now you all know my password.
So you all see that he's still using App Controller.
Yes. You see all the different components on which D drive, on which drive it will be installed, the which group will be used to have admin privileges. So all of those different components will be configured, like a service manager, all my different service accounts.
That seems a lot of work, but maybe you don't need to install everything. Maybe you don't want to install VMM, you don't want Windows Azure Pack, so you could just remove what you don't need.
Yeah, so if you don't want, for example, SMA, you can easily just, well, you don't even need to delete it here. You just need to delete it in the roles. So in this part, you will basically decide which components will be installed on which server. So if I don't want, for example, the DPM console, I basically just delete this, and nothing will be installed now on that server. The same for my SQL instances. That's how you define the SQL settings.
And what is happening if I try to install Service Manager on the same server than Operation Manager? Is there a check somewhere?
Yeah, so we will see that later on in the install.ps1 script, the validation steps. I will show you that later on. Then the last part in the variable.xml file are the VMs. So you need to define the VM settings, like the memory settings, the number of processors, and so on. Which virtual switch on your Hyper-V server needs to be used. If it needs to be joined to the domain as well, in which organizational units you want to have your servers. And then you need to define every single server like this. So VM count 4, and then you specify the name of the server, VM count 5, and so on. So Christopher, I'm now going to add another server to my deployments. I want a terminal server gateway, basically, which will contain my VMM console, my SCOM console, and so on.
Okay, so the idea is really there to have an administration server with everything installed, all the consoles, so where from where you will be able to manage all your systems and the stack.
Yeah. So I will just copy-paste those three lines. So I have now...
It seems that the line was already there.
So I have now a VM count 17, so a 17 machine with this as name, RD02. If I don't specify memory settings, it will use the default settings that you have defined at the top. It will use those default settings. So you can see default settings. So if you don't specify memory settings, it will use those default settings. Now I've added another machine, so I need to make sure that my count reflects the total count reflects the number of virtual machines. Otherwise, that new machine will not be be deployed. So I've now changed the variable.xml file to have a new virtual machine. I still need to add the consoles to my new machine. So I'll just copy paste this and add it in here. So I have now my VMM console and my SCOM console that will be deployed to my new server. So I will save this this file. And that's all you need to do basically to add or remove components. So I've now gathered my requirements. I've defined my deployment in my variable.xml file. The next step is to download all of it, Christopher.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so as you saw, the variable.xml is in fact your technical design. So you've got your technical design with all your prerequisite, all your service account, all the server name, all the component that will be installed. No? So yes, we need to download all these bits. So Alex already told us that for licensing and marketing reason, you have to download manually the system center bits. But for everything else, like SQL, like SharePoint Foundation, if you want to install the portal for Service Manager, if you need also some management pack could be also downloaded directly, all the prerequisite from the one of the first slides that we saw. So we've got a script for that. So the downloader.ps1 script will take care of this for you. So it will download everything that you need, except the bits from System Center itself, but all the prerequisites, all management pack that you should have that you need. All the service pack also, if you need service pack for SharePoint Foundation, for SQL, it will take care of it. And also, it will directly run this. It will do the extract. It will also do the slipstream. So if you are running SQL, you need SP2, it will slipstream directly SP2 to SQL. Like this, you will have a up-to-date installation at the end. So that's really the idea. What is really also in... Yep.
That's a good question. So the question was, what about cumulative updates for System Center? You will have to download them manually or use Windows updates. But that's indeed a missing piece. Not for SQL, so the cumulative updates for SQL will be downloaded, but for System Center you need to do it manually, yeah.
Yeah, and I think also for System Center I always prefer to do it manually because, for example, for Operation Manager, when you've got the update rollup, you download the bits, it's installed, but you still have to run some SQL scripts, you still need to run, to import some management packs, so I think for that it's better to do it manually to be sure that everything is going well. Here, what is really important, sorry, there, it's restartable. So you could say, okay, I will leave my office, I will start the download. Oh, something failed, or internet connection goes down, or I have to shut down my laptop because I want to go back home and I don't want to wait. It's restartable, so it will continue next time. You just restart the downloader.ps1. It will check your source folder when you've got all your bits that have been already downloaded. And if one is missing, it will resume the download over there. Question? Yes. Okay, yeah, it's also for R2. Now, let's take a look to the downloader.ps1. Okay, so it's just a simple script that we need to run, and we start it. And it will check everything that it needs to download, the size of all the bits. It will really check everything that needs to be done before initiating the download. So that's really the idea. We'll check, okay, is I enough size, what I need, which component we defined, and everything. And you will see in a few minutes, it's starting already to download everything that we need. Okay, we've got some errors here. So, okay, not found, page not found, so maybe the file has another location. Microsoft, time to time, when they update report viewer or whatever, they change the link to the download Microsoft website. That's not a problem because, as we said, you could restart it if the file was not available at that time. But also, you could edit directly the file for that. If you go over there on the workflow.xml, you will see all the prerequisites, all the file that will be downloaded has been defined in the workflow.xml file, like report viewer, for example. And what you have here, you've got the link. So if a link is broken, that's not a problem. Two options, you could wait that, three options, I would say. You could wait that Microsoft will fix it and receive a new version of the workflow.xml from Microsoft. You could fix it yourself. So you've got the link, you've got the path, you could put it. Or you could download it manually and put it directly in the source folder. That's not a problem because next time that you will start the loader or the installer, it will check if all the bits are there, all the needed bits are there. So that's not a problem. You could download it manually and you could directly update the file for yourself. As you could see, we've got everything which is defined there. It's just XML file. So you could copy paste, edit section, add some different URL and pointing to the right bits. Like you could see, everything is going on here. And let me take a look. And in fact, what the script is doing is downloading everything and will add everything in this folder. So if one of the downloads is failing, you could just download it manually, find it from somewhere else, and put it there. And of course, if you have to redo your lab often and often, you've got already all the prerequisites that are there. You don't need to download it again. So you've got everything. What the script will do, it will do a check of this folder. Okay, this file has been already downloaded. I don't have to redo again. And that's it. Like this, you will have all your prerequisites. Everything will be stored there. What are the next steps? So as now that we've got all the bits, we need to create the VM because we said we need to install our system component somewhere. We are just at the beginning of our installation.
Yeah, so so we have gathered the requirements, we have defined the deployments in variable.xml, we have downloaded all the bits. The next step is to create a virtual machine. So I'm going to launch that script as well. Just with one single button, basically, I will be able to... deploy a new virtual machine, and as you can see, some components have already been deployed and installed before, and now the only thing that is missing will be the new machine. So you can see it's checking that the machines have already been deployed, except SCU R202 that will be added.
So it means that if you already done one installation with, I don't know, maybe Service Manager, VMM, and so on, and you say, okay, no, I need to install Orchestrator, you could just update your file and restart it, restart the installer.ps1. So it will, in fact, resume or redesign, update your design, and start to deploy the VM.
Yeah. So you can see now that our my new machine 02 has been deployed and will now be joined to the domain. We will come back to that later on. So let's have a look at the VM creator.ps1 scripts. You can reuse existing servers if you want to. You don't need to deploy new virtual machines, so you can use existing virtual machines. Or you could use Azure as well if you change the PowerShell commandlet. You don't forget to specify the server count in variable.xml, like I did. I changed from 16 to 17. Define the default settings, like the memory settings, which how many processors you want, if you want to join it to domain, or if you want to reuse an existing domain. But you get a full example basically in the default variable.xml when you download PowerShell Deployment Toolkit. So that example will help you and guide you on how you need to define the settings basically. And remember, if you just specify the name of the server, and if you don't specify any other settings, it will use the default settings. On the other hand, you can override the settings per virtual machine if you want to. What I do most of the time is I define default settings, except that all my machines will use, except for my SQL server. So for my SQL servers, I prefer to override the settings and specify more memory, more processors, and so on. So I will define that for each SQL server basically that I'm using. VM creator.ps1, so the PowerShell script, will validate that all the resources, like the sysprept VHD, are available. It will then join the machines to the domain. So all of that will be done for you, Christopher. So you can basically deploy 17, 20, 25 machines for your lab environment with one single click, and you don't have to wait anymore for machines that will be provisioned for you.
Okay, I think that we've got a question over there.
So the question is, how can you define WinRM and all those other things in the group policies if you don't have an existing domain and you want to deploy or you want to use PowerShell deployment toolkits in a completely new environment without a domain? The question is, and then the answer is, it will fail on the WinRM validation steps. So the machines will be able to deploy. VM creator will work. That's not an issue, but installer scripts will fail. So you will not be able to deploy System Center. You will be able to deploy all the virtual machines, and then instead of immediately launching the PowerShell scripts, you stop after the machines have been deployed, and then you configure the group policies. Yes,
that's an idea. Or also, if you are already running one domain controller, you just don't break it and you keep it, and next time when you rebuild your lab, the DC should be another VM. Most of the time we don't rebuild our DC because the DC is still running well. We've got already the service account defined over there, and we are just rebuilding all the other VMs, and we keep our domain controller running.
So again, a quick snapshot at the variable.xml file and the VM settings. Don't forget to specify the counts, like mentioned before. Specify the VM settings on a default level, but override them for specific machines like the SQL server, for example.
Small question over here. Could you come back to the XML file? I'm not an XML guru. I'm not reading like this. If I try to do my installation with a lot of copy-paste and I did some typo in it, what is happening? It will install half of my system and it will crash afterwards? What is happening if I've got some mistakes, some typos in my XML file?
So it will before it will launch the virtual machines, or before it will deploy System Center, it's going to validate if the XML file doesn't contain any typo.
Okay, perfect.
So let's have a look now and see if the script has finished and the machine has been joined to the domain. Okay, so you can see the script has been finished. Yeah, the script is finished. The machine has been joined to the domain. So we are now ready to launch the installer.ps1 script. So again, just one single script, installer.ps1. And you will see, Christopher, it will now validate everything. It will validate the XML file. It will validate the SQL instances. It will validate the configuration. It will validate the media. It will validate the user accounts, the service accounts.
Everything that has been already installed. Everything that has been already there and all the prerequisites, in fact.
It will validate the variable.xml file. So it will validate if everything that you define in the variable.xml file is correct. But now you see validating remote. So it has been it will now connect to the virtual machines. And if it's not able to connect because WinRM is not enabled, for example, it will fail in this step. So we see now that two consoles have been or will be installed. If it's in white, like this, it needs that the consoles are not yet being installed because we need some prerequisites like SQL Server, system CLR types that needs to be installed. If it's in green, it means that the installation is busy. If it's in yellow, it means that we are waiting for another file. And if it's in red, yeah, then we have a big issue. So you see now the report viewer is being installed because we need it for the consoles, but we will come back to that later on. So the installer.ps1 script knows nothing about System Center. Installer.ps1 is a PowerShell script that will that will read all of the configuration of the workflow.xml file and the variable.xml file. So in the variable.xml file, you define your deployment, which component needs to be installed on which server and so on. But then all the intelligence, all the validation, like you see now, has been defined in the workflow.xml file. Some System Center components cannot be installed with other System Center components. To give you an example, the service manager data warehouse management server cannot be installed together with the service manager management server. And if you don't know that, if you put those two System Center components on the same server, it will fail. So that intelligence has been built in the workflow.xml file to check the combinations basically. So this means that basically even my mother or my sister, Christopher, could deploy a full-blown System Center lab.
Okay. I was thinking that you told me that I was able to deploy it.
So in the workflow.xml file, you define all the intelligence is in there. All the dependencies has been put in there as well. Like for the orchestrator, runbook server, you need this and this dependency. All of that has been defined in the workflow.xml file. And Rob Willis from Microsoft, he's updating the files or the scripts independently from each other. So it's possible that tomorrow the workflow.xml file will have a new a new version or a higher version. You can just download that and with new, and it will contain new validation steps, for example. So that's why we have all of those scripts separately. We have the downloader script, we have the VM creator script, we have the install script, we have the variable.xml file, we have the workflow.xml file. So we have five files basically that are being updated independently of each other. And the workflow.xml file is completely extensible as well. If you want to define, your own integration steps, for example, You could do that in there. If you want to import custom margin packs in SCORM, you can add them as well in the workflow.
Yeah, if you want to deploy, for example, a new service manager portal from Sarezan or whatever, you could also modify the script and add your own knowledge in it directly.
Yep. So the installer.ps1 script will do all of those manual steps that that Christopher needs to do one by one. It will install the prerequisites like we have seen with the consoles. It will install SQL. It will grant the service account permissions. All of that will be done for you manually. And it will also, for example, connect the consoles. So if you install the VMM console on a server, and you launch the VMM console the first time, you still need to type manually the server name of your VMM server. You don't need to do that anymore. The VMM console will be deployed, will be installed with the name of your VMM server, because we know that we have that information from the variable.xml file. It will import the margin packs. It will connect all the different system center components together. So it will connect VMM to SCORM. It will connect SCORM to Service Manager, and so on and so on.
So you've got already a direct integration between Service Manager, Orchestrator, CI stuff, and so on. Okay.
Yes. Yep. So you're wondering why I have so much free time, Christopher? That's because of PowerShell deployment toolkits.
Okay. I get it.
It will install the agents for you as well. So all of that is done with the installer.ps1 scripts. It's completely extensible. And it's restartable as well. So we have seen now, I've launched the installer PS1 script. The PowerShell script saw that we had already my SQL server installed, my 16 other machines, basically. So it skipped those installations, and it went directly to the new terminal server with the console that we want to deploy today. So let's have a look at the workflow.xml file. So Christopher has shown us already the
part with the prerequisite,
where you can download the bits, where everything has been downloaded or will be downloaded. You can see, for example, how it's installing the orchestrator, how it's installing VMM, and then at the bottom, you can see, for example, all the server features that needs to be installed. You can see, for example, that to install VMM console, we need this and this feature. It can; those are the prerequisites. It can; those are the combinations. So, you for example, the app controller additional server can be installed with those on those other servers as well. So those are the validation steps. The same for the config manager console.
So the knowledge is really in this file. So yeah. It's really there that you've got all the intelligence, that you've got everything. It's really the workflow.xml.
Yeah. So for example, if you want to add a new role that is not in here, and you don't know the exact name, you can basically just copy paste this sentence and paste it in here.
So variable.xml is your design. Workflow.xml is how to do it. Or it will do it in the background when you install it.
And then at the bottom of the page, at line 34,000, we have the integration steps. So that's where System Center will be connected to each other. So VMM to SCORM, SCORM to Service Manager, and so on. So we gathered the requirements. We defined the deployment in a variable.xml file. We downloaded all the bits. We deployed a new VM with the VM creator. We launched the installer.ps1 script to deploy the consoles in our newly created script, VM. So let's have a look now if
Everything else goes well, yeah. And it's been installed.
So you can see now that the two consoles have been deployed to our new server.
4 minutes.
In 4 minutes, yeah. So let's have a quick look. Now, in total, if you want to deploy the full-blown system center from scratch, from nothing, it will take about 3 to 4 hours to deploy everything.
And if you have to do it manually, it could be weeks,
yeah,
for sure.
It takes 3 to 4 hours because some components you cannot install in parallel. Like, we need to wait for the SQL installation to be finished before we can start with the VMM server, for example. We need to wait for VMM to be able to connect to SCOM until SCOM has been installed and VMM has been installed. So. And you can see now that we have a newly deployed
server yeah,
with the consoles installed. Yes, we have a question. That depends. So the question is, what's the total amount of disk space for everything to be installed? It depends basically on the on your VHD, on your operating system file. I'm using a 40 gigabytes disk for each individual server. I have about 17 machines, and in total, let's have a look. Yeah, about 250, 260.
But keep in mind that this is a lab. There is yeah, not a lot of data in the SQL DB and so on. So that just to give you an idea, it will really depend on how many system center components you need, and after that with the data that you will get in it. So yes, it shows that everything went well when you did your demo. So that's already great. But no, what if something is going wrong? What are you doing? Well, you could have some information.
So to troubleshoot PDT, you have a couple of log files. First of all, the PowerShell deployment log files, and then you have the installation log files. The PowerShell deployment log files, those are the log files that PDT will generate. And the installation log files, those are basically the System Center components log files. And PDT, so System Center will be installed locally on the VM inside the virtual machine. And PDT will, once the installation is done, PDT will copy from the VM that system center log file and copy paste it to the Hyper-V host, basically. So let's have a quick look. So you can see my log file saying that the VMM console and the SCOM console has been installed on this server, and those are the files that PDT will copy from the VM and bring basically to the Hyper-V host. So inside the SCOM console folder, you have basically the log files saying that we copy the media, we copy the files will be installed or setup will be launched, and so on. So if you have an issue, Christopher, you can start troubleshooting in
yeah,
here.
So it means that you don't have to connect to all the different server yeah, over there. It will retrieve all the logs, all the information in one place.
Some tips. So once you have deployed your virtual machines and you want to launch the installer.ps1 script, use the validate only script
option.
So the validate option, validate only option, will not deploy System Center, but it will validate the options. And trust me, the first time you work with the PDT, you will have some issues or some red things that you need to fix, like typical thing is the administration privileges or the WinRM not being enabled, or a combination of components that cannot coexist together. So use the validate only option first, make sure that everything is in green, and then launch the installer.ps1 script without the validate only script. Yes? No, so the question is, will the validate only option also check the bits and download the bits? And the answer is no. So it will check the bits. It will say if the bits are missing, which media file or which prerequisite is missing, but it will not download them automatically for you. You still need to do it yourself.
Because
or you can relaunch the download.ps1
exactly.
Script. Yeah.
This is the role of the download.ps1 script.
Another common issue is with the report viewer.msi prerequisites. I don't know why, but this prerequisite is the one prerequisite that is giving me a lot of trouble. I think it's because Microsoft in the background is updating it quite often. So in the workflow.xml file, like Christopher showed us, you can see where Microsoft is downloading the report viewer.msi file, and you can download it manually, or you can relaunch the download.ps1 script. But because Microsoft is updating that file on a regular basis, the product code of that MSI file will change quite often as well. So if you launch the installer.ps1 script, it will install the report viewer.msi. It will then check if the installation was successful of the report viewer.msi file. And if the product code in the workflow.xml file is not matching the product code that you have inside the server, you will have an error as well. So if you have issues with the report viewer.msi file, have a look at the product code and have a look at the file size and version of report viewer as well. And yes, Azure is possible.
We already spoke about.
So thank you for your attention. I hope it's clear now that you have two ways of installing System Center. The stress way like Christopher is doing, and the easy, relaxed, calm way with a lot of free time with PDT. So if you have any questions, we will be here for a few more minutes, and we'll be in the expo hall as well. And don't forget to provide feedback as well. It's important for us. SEU will donate as well for every feedback. So it's important to do that as well.
We are the last day, yep. So I don't think that there is still a lot.
Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much.